All right.
Okay, ready. Thanks, Dick.
Sure.
Happy afterwards.
Okay. Good morning.
Hello, how are you?
As always, and yourself?
Can you hear? Oh, okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. Sometimes this whole phone connection thing is a little odd. But anyway, I'm giving you a great big energy hug right now, and it's fabulous to be talking to you. And, okay, let's see. Here's how I'll begin. To start out this session, I'll state an impression I had while I foraged through artwork and storage. An owl's head, I sense the clue. Is this the city's bird's eye view? What I'm referring to here, of course, is I looked at an old lithograph I made many, many years ago. I saw a little triangle shape at the top of this depiction of an owl's head, and it looked like a bird's eye view of an archipelago of islands, and I was wondering if I encoded a map of the city of the future into that.
Yes.
Okay, cool. That's what I thought. Let's see. Okay, so I perceive this little island in this triangle shape. Is the triangle shape itself a clue worthy of investigation?
Yes.
Okay. So the last time we talked, you gave me some clues to help me become aware of when future focuses are endeavoring to contact or communicate with me. And you mentioned specifically fluctuations, and I wish to report that in the 6 months since our last discussion, I've had 3 contacts that are, in my opinion, no doubt valid contacts. Is that correct?
Yes, you are correct.
Okay, great. These are very, just no doubt. This is real, this is happening, and this is going on. A little disconcerting. The 3 contacts took place in my work environment. And here's what happened. In my right field of vision, I saw a thin and wavering but very pronounced curved shimmering frame of streaming undulating colors, as if I could see through my regular vision, but I had this like little peripheral framework going around. And the colors that kept jumping out at me were turquoise and a kind of a pale red color that were very noticeable. And the occurrence was startling because I knew it was a contact, so to speak, but I also wondered if it was a phenomenon that I, of course, would claim to have control over, because it's like, I'm enjoying this happening, this is neat, I don't know if I want this to go on 5 hours from now type of thing. So anyway, I was a little concerned regarding the duration of the event. I guess this would be a typical example of desiring a quote, contact, unquote, from the great unknown, so to speak, but at the same time being apprehensive of, being swept away by the event. So I guess that's a natural thing. But at the same time, it's that conundrum of craving for a contact, but the contact happens and then you get a little scared of it, But anyway, so here's the 3 events, the time they took place. The first one, I was working on one of my drawings, which I work on at work sometimes, and that's when the first one occurred. And the second time, I was talking to a coworker who was a college student and a writer, and I was describing a short story that I wrote, because I've been into writing short stories lately. And it's a short story called Glove Story, which has to do with the future and other dimensions, et cetera, et cetera. And while I was talking to her and describing this, all of a sudden the phenomenon took place, and I didn't mention to anybody else it was taking place. I was trying to retain my focus of my conversation, but still observe this and, be aware of it. And it lasted for about 20 minutes. And the third time, it was like I had just gotten off work and I was walking along the bayfront, which is, I work on a tour boat on a river, and I was walking along the bayfront after work and it took place. Each time the event took place, about 20 minutes or so, and it just kind of faded out. So anyway, my overall impression is that some mysterious someone wishes to look back on the past.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Basically, it's like this is more taking place in my right field of vision. I don't know if that has to do with the brain hemispheres or just, you know, physical things or something like that.
That would be understandable. But remember, the energy in this shift is shifting from male to female.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And there,
okay, I got you. I got where you're coming from. Okay.
Therefore, that would be quite understandable.
Okay, that makes sense. That's true. And the only thing about intuition, because I see myself, you know, first I'm a male, but I see myself as a male who is, I'm very concerned with, or not concerned in a negative way, but I mean, it's very important to me that intuition takes place in my life to do with my creativity and, you know, artwork, music, and writing.
Yes.
To do with intuition, which has always been like the domain of females, you know, so to speak. And I embrace that, you know, the intuitive thing, the female side of the personality. Okay, let's see. So anyway, so this person looking through me, is this a future focus of myself or possibly somebody that's not a future focus of myself, but is it an historian from the city, so to speak, studying me?
It is a future focus.
Future focus, okay, okay. Neat. Now, okay, let me get my little piece of paper organized here. I try to organize these things, but I always have a little bit. Okay, so, okay, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to get organized here. Okay, oh, anyway, okay, so in this contact, I described the shimmering circle frame type of thing I'm looking through. And it occurred to me, okay, did I create a visual representation of this in a painting I did over 30 years ago that's part of a triptych called Ant Farm?
Yes.
Okay, I'm looking at the painting right now, and of course, it's the circular framework type of thing is very much more solid, less shimmery, you know, so it's rendered, you know, in my painting. But it seems to be that same kind of effect. Okay, let's see. So, okay, this particular painting has always been regarded by people who know me as a bit odd, even by my standards. And as I did with my blue eye painting, I took it out of storage where it had been for 30 years or more, and I hung it on my wall. And after pondering it, it seems to me that this entire painting is a sort of a diagram or a schematic. Would that be accurate?
Yes.
Oh, thanks, okay. Is this related to some future probability and possibly even a practical application of time travel?
Yes.
Okay, great, interesting. Okay, and moving along to a different phase here. Okay, this question concerns one of the objects from my quote-unquote treasure hunt game. And this is a garnet crystal I found on a small patch of river shore in St. Augustine, Florida, in front of the Castillo de San Marcos, which is an old fortress for a few hundred years ago. Anyway, garnet crystals are not indigenous to my local area's geology, so I'm sure that someone lost this stone, or perhaps intentionally left it where I found it. And incidentally, the stone is slightly magnetic, and it will deflect a compass needle, which leads me to the subject of crystals, as they have been mentioned before, being used for the purpose of storing energy, and not having energy themselves, so to speak, but it being like a energy holding device, so to speak. But anyway, my former wife was intuitive about such things regarding crystals, and she always said that there was something very negative about this stone that she picked up about it. And I always felt the stone was significant in some way myself. Not so much, I didn't really ponder the negativity of it, but I always thought there was something very significant about this. And so anyway, much later I got to thinking about how I had read somewhere about Native Americans of ancient times using crystals in their ritual activities. And thinking about that, I got a strong impression of the fortress, which is, you know, the locale where I found this stone, the river in front, little river shore in front of the fortress, at one time was used to imprison Native Americans during the Seminole Wars, and I think this crystal is a repository, so to speak, of contemptuous energy inserted by one or more of the Native Americans who had been detained there. And some of these natives, I might add, made a very clever and daring escape by starving themselves to the point where they were able to squeeze through the prison bars and get away. Very clever. Awesome. But anyway, I picked up this impression that I think this that the energy that I'm perceiving in this stone was intended to be, based on their belief system, a curse upon the town and its government of the time. And I think this might be the negative element that my wife perceived. Am I on track with this?
Yes, I would agree.
Interesting. And this would be Seminole Indians, did this?
Yes.
Like basically, it was left behind as a kind of a, you know, but them, through their beliefs, putting a curse on those that had brought such, you know, misery to them.
Yes, I would agree.
Okay, great. That is really neat, really neat. Okay, and that evidently was why my ex-wife picked up on the negativity coming from the stone. There's actually a stored energy in there that is meant to be negative. Not, I mean, maybe I should say negative. That's concern, you know, not me as like the current owner of the stone. Okay. So, is there any other energy stored in the stone? Possibly future energy, maybe like that existed before the Native American found the stone that they used.
There was.
Oh, there was. Okay, so where you're coming from, would this be that when the Native put their own energy into that stone, it displaced the energy that was in there before?
Yes. You are correct.
Okay, I've got it. So, this relates to a question I had, which would be determined by the answer you just gave. But I was going to ask, would it be possible for me to still put my own energy into the stone, but still retain that negative energy, just more as like a historic artifice, so to speak? But I guess if I put my own energy in there, I would possibly be displacing what is in there too, right?
Somewhat, yes.
Somewhat, okay.
It is dependent upon the volume of energy that you project into the stone. If it is slight, you can retain the energy that is already within the stone, but you will displace some of it.
Okay, I understand. Okay, that's just the nature of energy, I guess, how it flows and it's, you know, the flowing of energy.
And the capacity of the stone.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, because the stone is going to, it'll have a, I guess, a finite capacity.
Yes.
So to speak. Okay.
Yes.
And it's interesting because I was very surprised. I only recently found this stone very long time ago. I can't remember when, but specifically, but it was back in the 1970s. And only recently, in the past few weeks, I put the stone next to a compass and noticed that it deflected the compass needle. I thought, okay, that magnetism, which is not that unusual for garnets, so there are such things as magnetic garnets, but I thought, okay, this would be the magnetism, made me think of electromagnetic energy, and that, you know, and that's when I started thinking of, like, the energy storage sort of thing. Okay,
yes.
That's pretty cool. All right. Okay, this is also kind of segues into, on this same, on the river in front of where this fortress is, where I found the crystal, about a half mile north of that, I've discovered, also again with no doubt whatsoever, a very powerful energy deposit. Almost, you know, and I've been working on this tour boat for a good portion of my life, and every time, whether I'm consciously focusing on it or not, when we pass near that spot on the tour boat, I could pick up this energy. Very strong, very pleasant and uplifting. But even if I'm not looking for this, I'll just get this sudden surge of what I'm referring to as a feel-good type of energy, and all of a sudden I'll happen to look up and go, oh, we have that spot. So there is a powerful energy deposit that I'm describing. This exists, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now I'm wondering about who created this energy deposit. I know probably every time I become aware of it, I'm adding to the energy deposit, and you're putting it, you know, making a deposit to that bank, so to speak, but did dolphins create this energy deposit?
Yes.
Okay.
But you are correct. Any individual that participates with it increases it.
Okay, interesting, okay. So I assume that, yeah, every time I pick up on it, it's like it makes me feel good, but at the same time I'm putting energy in there too, okay? Also, I noticed that, I don't have this written down, it just popped in my head right now. Very close to that, there's an archaeological site, I mean, within very, very close to this on the shore, where they found Timucuan Indian burials and whatnot. Is there any connection with them and the dolphins? Well, that's what I was kind of getting at, is some of the, like, Native Americans who disengaged. I was wondering if some of their essence decided to inhabit the same area as dolphins nowadays.
Yes.
Okay, neat. Okay. I can picture that. Very neat. Okay, let's see. Okay, I've covered that here. Now I'm so organized and all my little papers are scattered everywhere, as always. Okay. Oh, boy, that's funny. Okay. So here's a question. This is for my friend Madison, and her daughter, Tiana, expressed a recognition by Essence name of my daughter, Macy, Marilyn, Macy being your Essence name. Well, you know that one. Anyway, Madison said that her daughter saw the name Macy on, an internet communication expressed, I know her. And so what I'm wondering now is, do these two children meet and play? They're both, Marilyn's 11 and, a little bit younger than Marilyn. So these two, I don't want to put it in context with the children, but anyway, do these two children meet and play in an out-of-body state? Or to be more specific, due to time zones, when one of these children would be asleep and the other would be awake, generally speaking, does the sleeping one project to the waking one on these occasions, and they playfully take turns doing that and fall it together, so to speak?
Yes.
Okay, neat. I thought that was, I figured. The kids usually know what's going on, but here she picked up on that. That was very valid. Okay, that's very neat. Cool. Okay, so let's see. Running right along here. Last year I became very interested in, obsessed. I became very obsessed with fiction short story writing, and I created two short stories. I'm working on a third, which will be put together as a trilogy. And in the first fiction story, there's a character, and her name is Ivy Hindwing. She lives in the future, but is the daughter of Leonardo da Vinci via artificial insemination, and the semen sample having been procured by her mother's best friend in a mischievous time-traveling adventure in which Leonardo becomes intoxicated and believes he is having sex with an angel. Anyway, this character, Ivy, resonates very much with me to the point where I'm curious if this character I have, of course, imagined is actually a future focus of me that I'm picking up on.
Yes.
Okay. Curiously, is there an actual probability in which there is somebody who actually goes by the name Ivy Hindwing? Because the name very, very much resonates with me. I created the name many, many years before I ever used that name as a story character.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So there's an Ivy Hindwing in the future, depending on which probability that is. Okay. Would this be associated with the city? Because I've associated her with the quote-unquote city of the future.
Yes.
Okay, neat. Very cool. Okay. Let's see where I am right now. Shuffling through my little papers. Speaking of, this is some questions regarding looking up focuses and whatnot. I remember in the past you mentioned, confirmed, can't think of the word, that one of my past focuses was a family member of Leonardo da Vinci. Was I Leonardo's father or mother in that focus?
Mother.
You said mother?
Yes.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so interesting enough, now that that's confirmed, I think that connection might have playfully formed the basis of my creation of the, Leonardo character being the father of, the real Leonardo in a fictional standpoint, being the father of Ivy Hindwing. That was that. Okay. And, let's see. Okay, so, and also in my story, this, the character Ivy Hindwing, I hate to refer to her as a character, now she's a widow. Anyway, me utilizing her as a story character, I should say. I don't mean to discredit her by referring to her as fictional at this point. She is a time traveler. Is the actual Ivy Hindwing a time traveler?
That individual incorporated an interest in that action for a time frame work, but not ongoing.
Okay. It would be more like a, not so much physical using a craft or anything like that, but more as a, associated with accessing time periods due to a extensive knowledge of time and how to, maybe traverse portals and that sort of thing?
Yes.
Okay. My story, I create this is maybe a bit humorous, but anyway, in my story, wherever Ivy Hindwing turns up in the past, her time machine that she travels in, her technological device, is viewed by the people who see it in a context that they can understand. This is in the context, I came up, I've read this before, but, UFOs being seen, they look in their own dimension, they just look how the people perceive them, so it's based on that. But anyway, in my creativity, in my story, I created, Ivy has a nickname for a time machine, and she calls it the Time Haggis, which is a Scottish reference to haggis, and because she appears in Scotland with his time machine, and there is a bunch of Scots and see the machine, it looks like a big giant haggis to them. So, in a painting that I was referring to that I did over 30 years ago that has the shimmering things to do with my content, the Amphorn Trilogy painting, another part of this has an odd-looking shape in it that I don't know how to describe, but it looks like this would be 30 years ago, me coming up with that actual time haggis as being an element of my story, but I created an actual visualization of that many years ago, and now realizing, there it is in the painting, there's the time haggis, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I'll take a picture of that, post it, so anybody can see it if they like to see it. Okay, let's see where I'm at now. Another thing that takes place in my story, my second story is called Gloves, and, there is a pair of gloves that are imbued with artificial intelligence. Is that me picking up on some kind of future piece of technology?
A translation.
A translation. I've got you. And there's another one I feel a little bit more strongly about. Programmable animated tattoos. Would that be a probable future technological invention?
Yes.
Okay. In fact, I even got to the point where I perceive these tattoos as being a kind of an interface, almost like how we use the internet nowadays. There are these, the internet, your access to the internet and all your processing and your, basically your, computations and storage, et cetera, et cetera. And not only that, but a way of visually seeing what dreams look like, that people will utilize in the future, but they'll wear it, by choice, they'll wear it on their own body. It's actually part of the body, not something that would be strapped on a wrist or whatever the tattoo would be, but it actually would be kind of like interface with the body itself, as well as a kind of representation of what we refer to nowadays as a computer interface.
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting. Alrighty, I would like to ask a couple of, I'm curious about concurrent focuses and, or just focus people, I guess I've got the right concurrent focus, wants to be in focus now, they're also another focus of OVA. I'm just thinking of different people that really resonate with me, their creativity primarily. So, am I a concurrent focus with the recording artist David Bowie?
Counterpart.
counterpart. Okay, okay. And am I a concurrent focus with the writer Thomas Pynchon?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, I really feel that one. Very, very strong connection. That really makes my day. This is so cool. So cool. Awesome. Okay, and okay, now back to Seminoles. Seminole Indians. Was Osceola, the famous Seminole, was he a focus of Ova?
Observing.
Observing, okay, okay. Interesting, I got a little question here. This is Osceola was, you know, Native American and also Caucasian as well in his genetics. And he had a grandfather, a great-grandfather, I forget the specifics right now. His last name was McQueen. And of course, my McSween ancestors and McQueens all have a certain origin in a certain place in Scotland. Is there a genetic, physical connection between myself and Osceola?
Yes.
Neat. I always kind of felt that. Awesome. Okay, great. I would like to now conclude my portion of my questions. I would like to pass on a couple of questions for Iona. And first of all, I have her questions here, and she wanted to first state that please tell Elias that OPAN and I send our greetings. I'm reading her question, her statement there. So she and OPAN send their greetings. And she was referring to, you know, her health situation, but she is going to be talking to you soon in the session, but I want, this is very important. I want to pass this on right now, you know, for her. But so I'm going to just read the question as it's written. She goes, please ask Elias if in the past few months my creation of several health situations, which are considered rare in the medical community, connected to my tumult intent during this perception wave, in addition to being part of my soft physical manifestations.
Yes.
Okay. And she says, now I'm reading the question again, says, can you tell Elias that I'm still testing pregnant 4 months after my ectopic surgery, and the doctor says this is very unusual and I may need some chemotherapy and my own, if my own levels do not go down to zero, because this could turn into a cancer. And is this due to me still deciding whether I want to continue with this focus?
Somewhat, but also somewhat of an experimentation in unusual manifestations and what she can accomplish in manipulating energy.
Okay, okay, that's interesting. Interesting. I'm sure she'll be quite interested in that. Okay. There's another question. It says, does Elias have any further insight into this pregnancy creation that can give me more clarity in this situation?
In what capacity? We have discussed this previously.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, okay. There's one more question on here. OPAN has an impression that Apollonia is an alternate essence tone translation for Iona. Can he confirm this?
Yes.
Okay, interesting. Okay, great. And based on this, I have a my own question based on what Iona is going through. And I'm going to try to paraphrase this because I remember I was talking to Mary about this earlier as well, that sometime in the past you had mentioned about just basically the source event of the shift in general being perceived by humanity in a somewhat tumultuous, I'm not using exact words, but I'm trying to paraphrase, tumultuous, almost like, you know, birth pangs and that sort of thing. You know, kind of a traumatic, like striking event. And I'm wondering myself if this, what Iona is going through, is her, it's almost like a kind of a metaphorical, her making in a physical way the manifesting the birth of the shift metaphorically.
Yes, somewhat. I would agree.
Okay, okay. I was curious about that myself. Okay, that's interesting. Okay, I've been keeping track of my time, and I think we are exactly upon a half an hour here, so I would like to express very much a thank you for our discussion. It's been As always, it's more fun than I can even describe. It's been great. Much to ponder about, and definitely looking forward to our next discussion. I want to thank you.
And I shall be anticipating that also, my friend. As always, I continue to offer you tremendous encouragement in your adventures. To you, in great appreciation and dear friendship. Au revoir.
Au revoir.